But first, a recently acquired portrait of Harry Truman will be unveiled tonight at the Plaza branch of the Kansas City Public Library. While the portrait is only a reproduction, the original 1945 painting will soon be on display in the Smithsonian's National Portrait Gallery. With us to talk about all of this are Kim Sayet. She's director of the National Portrait Gallery. And Kim, welcome, and welcome to Kansas City.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Also here is the gallery's senior historian. That's David Ward. David, welcome to you, too.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be here.
Well, Kim, let's start with this portrait of President Truman that's being unveiled tonight at the Plaza branch of the Public Library. I'm wondering, will this be the first portrait of President Truman at the National Portrait Gallery, or is this something of a supplemental portrait?
No, actually, we do have another portrait at present in the galleries, but it's sort of...
Well, thank goodness, as
yeah,
you should.
Yeah, no, he's there. Yes. He's there. But we, to be honest, didn't think it really did him justice. It sort of has this soft, romantic focus. We like to say it's you could have been on the cover of some bodice ripper, let's say. and we're very happy with this particular portrait. We've known about it for quite a while. The provenance is rather wonderful. It was painted in 1945. The president sat for the painter, J. Wesley Jacobs, five times. Mm-hmm. And then it was actually intended as to go as a gift from Lawrence Wood Robert, who was a prominent Atlantan, actually, out of Georgia, served as Assistant Secretary of the Treasury in the Franklin Roosevelt administration. And the intention, his intention was always to give it to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite know what happened there, but it never did. The family kept it. And it's actually his daughter that later turned to us and said, "Would you like the painting?" Apparently, Truman himself thought he was looked too good in the picture. he said he was a little bit overflattered, but
that
his wife,
like old Harry.
Yeah. But his wife said she thought it was absolutely wonderful and charming, and we do too. You show him, actually, he's in the White House, and on one side is the American flag, on the other side is the flag of the Great Seal of the United States.
Well, do we have any feel, David, or Kim, for that matter? Was President Truman a patient portrait sitter? Or knowing him, I wonder how he tolerated such an experience.
I think that most public officials actually don't tolerate it particularly well.
They're
busy people. They're naturally impatient. And then there's a kind of predisposition where you don't want to actually look like you're flattering yourself by having your picture taken. George Washington famously said when he was painted that he felt sullen, that he was in a bad mood. I think they do it with good grace. I think Mr. Truman did sit for it in good grace. I mean, they understand the dynamic. We do acquire the portraits from the White House. We have at the Portrait Gallery the only other complete list of presidents in portraiture along with the White House. It's the only place you can go in public to see it. We do have, in addition to the older painting that we're replacing, we have a lot of other portraits of Harry Truman, Time magazine covers, drawings, and, of course, photographs.
Mm-hmm. Now, President Truman is interesting because this portrait that's going to be on display at the Plaza branch and will be joining your gallery, this was made just shortly after he became president. And, of course, President Truman said so famously when he took the oath of office, he told reporters later that it felt like the sun and the moon and the stars had all fallen on my shoulders. Can you see the weight of the world in this portrait, David?
That's a really interesting question because you can't. You cannot. The painting was done in May 1945, a month after, and as you've quoted the famous statement about the planet or Eleanor falling on him or Eleanor Roosevelt saying,
"Yes,
you're the one that we have to help you, Harry. You're the one in trouble now." And Mr. Truman, who did have uncertainties, did have anxieties, and he had learned to master them. First, when he was a senator, and then as vice president, that he was as good as anyone else. But it's a very difficult time in our history. It's the wrapping up, aside from the sudden death of President Roosevelt.
So much is going on,
and he doesn't know about the atomic bomb. He doesn't. You know, he has to. The war in Europe has wrapped up, but the war in Japan is bloodily continued. He has the atomic bomb decision to make, and you can't see any of it in the portrait. The portrait is a full face. He's looking indomitable. He looks like a kind of wise owl in a double-breasted suit. Harry, I think, favored the double-breasted look, and he looks very elegant. And it's a very forthright political statement of his determination to be the best president he can be.
And as an expert in portraiture, is there a place for that kind of painting, a place for a painting that doesn't reveal surely what's going on inside his head?
That actually is the key point, and I'm going to talk about it tonight at the event you've referenced, about the way in which political portraiture, presidential portraiture in particular, actually serves as a kind of a mask, that it disguises the anxieties. It presents a smooth, confident appearance. It serves as a political or even in the case of some presidents, a national statement of purpose.
Yeah.
It's a confidence builder both for the individual and for the nation. And there's a rhetoric about public presidential portraiture that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It frequently does not reveal or always does not reveal internal insecurities.
Now, Kim, these presidential portraits, there are only a few places in the country that you can go see all of them, your place being one, the White House being a second place. Do I have
that
right?
And that's it, the two
that's
of them. Yeah,
okay.
And good luck getting into the White House these days. So,
yes.
You know, you can come to the portrait gallery all of but one day a year, completely free, of course, because we're one of the Smithsonians,
mm-hmm.
and we welcome everyone. And of course, it's not just the one group of people who get in automatically are the presidents, you know. And so you can come and see them any time. But, of course, we do tell the history of America through its people. And we're the only museum that I know of that has both historians like David and also art historians on staff.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're making the decision on who comes into the collection, and we have a board of advisors that have to, congressional statute, make that decision, we look first at, has a person made national significant impact, has to be national, just not regional or local. And then is there a work of art that's suitably great to put in the People's National Portrait Gallery? So it's that sort of tension and combination and lots of furious discussions. You can imagine it's never dull and boring.
I was going to say, I bet that'd be a fascinating conversation to sit and listen to.
Yes.
Yeah. David, you take part in those conversations?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's really interesting the way in which the creative tension between the history and biography side and then the art history and formal elements of the work of art have to work in tandem. They have to be a debate. The debates are spirited but never bad-tempered.
Can you reveal, maybe it's like picking a pope and you can't tell me this, but is there a recent person of national stature that was intensely debated and maybe got in the gallery or maybe did not that you can talk about?
I mean, I can tell you, I mean, history changes all the time too. And so we already had a portrait of Lance Armstrong, for example. It's a really handsome, wonderful portrait. And then, of course, you know, all of the drama came up where he admitted to drug test doping.
So did you take it out?
Well, no, it's in the collection.
Mm-hmm.
And but, of course, we had to change the way that the label was written and how we talk about, you know, organized sports, particularly, you know, in this case, organized cycling. And that's actually, I think, the strength of the National Portrait Gallery, particularly in this democratic country. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we very openly, as I often say to people, there is no moral test to be in the portrait gallery, because if that was to happen, there'd be no one on the walls, quite frankly. I mean, you know, even George and Martha Washington had 9 enslaved Africans. And when we mm-hmm. talk about the Trail of Tears with Andrew Jackson and so this, you know, all of the people in the portrait gallery, much like all of us here, have to make choices about our lives. But it's the accumulation of someone's life and the impact that they've left behind, good and bad, that we're interested in. David, you...
I mean, we do, just on the simplest level, we do have bad guys in the collection. We have... Actually, it's a wonderful... I hate to say it, we have a great photograph of Al Capone. John Wilkes Booth is represented in the collection. The point is, historically, as Kim says, it's not a moral test.
It's an impact question.
Well, yeah, it's exactly. It's what's the influence on American history and life. I don't think we want to reveal somebody who we haven't taken in the collection, but I mean, the debate is spirited, and I think we owe the confidence we need to keep it confidential in terms mm-hmm. of who didn't get in. But we constantly, as Kim is saying, history, as in the case of Harry Truman was treated very unkindly by contemporaries, went out, was seen essentially as a failure.
Oh, yes.
And over time, historians have reassessed his presidency from a distance. They've looked at his decisions.
And David McCullough's biography, his magisterial biography, really lifted him up a little bit.
Well, and also there's been, because the politics changes, the biography changes. President Truman was helped by the book with Merrill Miller, Plain Speaking. Just as I'll bring it up, Watergate was happening. The notion that you could have an honest man as president was mm-hmm. seen as refreshing in the 1970s. And But historians and the citizenry in general are always looking back to triangulate between the events of, say, 1945 and the events of today.
Kim, how often does the board, whatever it is, meet to decide who gets in and maybe who doesn't?
Twice a year. They're called the commissioners. So it's always a spirited debate, and it's always interesting. Now, what has recently happened, actually, up until about 2002, I believe, we only – it was sort of the 10-year dead rule. So, you know, and this actually started in the National Portrait Gallery in London, which was sort of the first National Portrait Gallery.
Meaning you had to be 10
you had
dead,
to be
10
dead.
Years to get
yeah,
in.
Yeah, exactly. So that
but
gave
Lance
you –
Lance Armstrong's in.
Well, no, so we changed
the,
that.
The idea really was, again, and it was a little bit stuffy, a little bit overly responsible, that you wanted to have the historical perspective of at least 10 years to assess somebody so we didn't make hasty decisions. The problem with a culture and a democracy as vibrant as America, it meant that we were continually out of date. 10 years just didn't work. And so what we did was we changed our categories. We now have a category called contemporary, which is it's a little like purgatory. You sit in hope that you will be elevated to our permanent collection. And that's where we deal with people. For instance, we just got – it's actually a great painting of – the pop singer Katy Perry last year. Katy's in the contemporary collection, and if she continues to have success and performs well at the Super Bowl, we'll move her up the ladder.
She's very concerned about this, too.
I'm sure she is. Well, it'd be a nice thing for her. She does know that we have the painting in our collection. She came, and Kim can speak to this, but she came to the gallery, was delighted to see it, tweeted to all the Katy Kates, so it was great. But we really want to reflect not only the history and biography of the past, but we want to reflect the biography and contemporary history of today. We want to go from essentially 1492 to now, and now we can do that.
Yeah, Kim. Yeah.
And the interesting thing is actually we were the first to sort of lift the dead year rule, and I think London has followed and all the other portrait galleries have sort of took our lead. So the other reason why it's particularly helpful is that we like artists to have had a direct relationship with the sitter. Mm-hmm. So we don't, we have an issue now as we look at the historic galleries of all the people that are missing, and that's going to be a part of what I'll be talking about tonight. But of course, history is written by the victors, and those who are depicted as portraits were also those that were considered important.
Yeah.
So we miss a lot of women, Native Americans, African Americans, you know, the sort of the gamut, if you like. But what we don't particularly want to do is go back in time and then recreate sort of portraits of people in a sort of we think they look like kind of manner.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to have people go into the contemporary collection means that we can have contemporary artists actually meet these people and interpret those people. So
Kim Say It a couple times has referred to an event tonight that's at 6:30 this evening at the Plaza branch of the Kansas City Public Library. You can come hear both Kim Say It and David Ward speak about the gallery, and you'll witness an unveiling of the reproduction of the portrait of Harry Truman. You know, Kim, you're touching on so many things I wanted to ask you about. So does the gallery itself commission these portraits, or are they commissioned privately, like in the case of the Truman portrait, which was commissioned by the William T. Kemper Foundation?
Well, we are, as you understand, part of the Smithsonian. We do get a little bit of funding to actually commission pictures, but it's very small.
Yeah.
Very small. So we do rely a lot on our own fundraising, and the Kemper Foundation helped us out with this picture. I mean, I think it'd be true to say that we could not have brought it to Washington had it not been for their financial help.
Mm-hmm.
We also rely very much on sort of gifts, either by artists or by others. And then we're always rattling the tin can. So it's sort of a combination of things that happen.
And the cost of a portrait, I mean,
it varies widely.
Varies by the artist and by the subject?
By the artist, by the subject, by its
scarcity. Can you give me a range?
You know, honestly, it can go anything from a couple of $1,000s to literally, you know, a couple. Well, there was a major picture that recently came up on the market. It was of Joseph Brandt, who was by a very famous painter, Gilbert Stuart. He did our Lansdowne portrait of Washington.
Yes.
It was actually auctioned in London. Our colleagues in London called us and said it's coming up and we will not get in your way because of sort of international import laws, heritage laws. if you can do it, if you can buy it. We absolutely wanted that picture, but it eventually sold for $7.4 million.
My goodness. So you're out of the running.
Well, yes. And I found out later that half the museums of America wanted that picture, and it actually did go to private hands, but we do know who that new owner is.
Mm-hmm. And we're not telling you.
So you're commissioning new works, and you're in the market for existing works constantly.
We're always looking, yes. I mean, we have around 23,000 portraits. We do have multiple portraits of people, particularly the presidents. We have about 1,600 portraits of the presidents. Wow. But having said that, you know, there are so many people that we don't have that we you know, we're very cognizant of the fact that there's a lot of work to be done. And it is that issue of you may get, as we do, a huge list of people we'd like in the collection. We have to find the appropriate work of art. So, for example, recently Carol Burnett was given an award at the Kennedy Center. And
yes.
I had the pleasure of going to that event, and we found out that we really didn't have a very good picture of her. Now, it was expressed to me, they said, well, why don't we just take a photo, you know, at the event? And I said, well, what we really would rather have is Carol Burnett during the time she did the Carol Burnett show,
mm-hmm.
you know, at that moment where everybody sort of identifies with her.
Yeah.
So that another example is recently, unfortunately, Robin Williams passed away, and we do have a wall where when someone passes, we put their portrait up. And it was a picture taken just while he was doing the TV show Mork and Mindy.
Mm.
And it just very much was a picture that sort of spoke to America. It was was retweeted many times. And, you know, it was great because it summed up, you know, the way we thought about him in the early
years. So at the National Portrait Gallery, just to be clear, you have both paintings and photographs.
And we're now collecting video, of course, drawings, sculpture.
All media.
All media.
David, is capacity becoming an issue with the numbers that Kim was just throwing around here?
Well, we do rotate. I mean, that's the other thing. If you come to the Portrait Gallery every 2 years, you'll see a different exhibition lineup. In addition to the permanent collection, which is around the national narrative, we also do special exhibitions. We put on as many special exhibitions as we can, which cover subjects that allow us to examine, you know, underserved minorities like women, African Americans, American Indians, and examine particular problems in American history. You know, so there is the element here of rotation and variety in the things that we do.
You know, going back to the Truman portrait again, that it'll be unveiled tonight at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. David, it was painted by a Carthage, Missouri native. His name was J. Wesley Jacobs. What do you know about him? Anything or?
We actually don't know very much about him at all. I think Kim has some more information. We even had trouble determining his death date. There was a little debate about that.
Yeah, I mean, there was some thought, actually. You know, it was a commission by this Lawrence Wood, otherwise known as Chip Robert Jr. And apparently J. Wesley Jacobs had done a portrait of Chip's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was already known to them in some way when he was given the commission for the Truman portrait.
Yeah.
So we don't know a lot about him. Certainly the first time he'll be represented in the gallery.
And at the library tonight, again, we're going to see a reproduction of the Truman portrait there. How are reproductions made?
It's a very high-resolution scan that is made at the Portrait Gallery, and then
Gallery itself.
Yes, the staff do it. I mean, the reason that it's not the original is that it's a very valuable work of art, but also, as you can imagine, back at the gallery, we have all the environmental controls that's necessary to maintain works of art in their highest capacity.
Which portrait at the gallery is regarded as perhaps either the most famous, the most valuable? Is there one that just really leaps out at you?
Our signature piece is the Gilbert Stuart Lansdowne Washington. It's called the Lansdowne Portrait of George Washington because it was commissioned by an English family that was sympathetic, English noble family that was sympathetic to the Revolution and to the cause of American freedom. It's a giant full-length portrait of George Washington as president in the 1790s. We have the original Gilbert Stuart painted, three replicas of the painting. One is at the White House, and you can see it at some of the president's press conferences in the background.
Right.
It's a spectacular grand manner painting, which essentially helps establish not only the American Republic but the office of the presidency. In that painting, Washington is essentially creating the political limits and political parameters of the presidency.
Yeah.
It's a spectacular work of art. We acquired it from the family when we underwent our renovation in 2000 to 2006. We bought it. It's our signature piece. It frames the Hall of Presidents. It's an opening to the entire history of the presidency.
And everybody would recognize that painting.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, if any of our listeners by any chance know anything about Carthage, Missouri native J. Wesley Jacobs and want to give us a call, 816-235-2888 is our number here. Again, 816-235-2888. If you have some information, it might be useful for our guests here as well. You guys also have a photograph of Truman, Stalin, and Churchill at Potsdam back in 1945, all seated next to each other, and it's displayed in the Presidency and the Cold War exhibit. I understand that this photograph represents Truman making his first foray into international diplomacy. You know, it took place not long after he became president, as we're talking here, David. And this is where he made his first mention of the atomic bomb. What other pieces like this do you have in the gallery?
Well, actually, that particular photograph was up in our Cold War exhibition, one of our special exhibitions. But it's up now in the Hall of Presidents, in the Roosevelt Truman section. And again, it's the way in which we work portraiture from the well posed and well the formal oil painting to kind of event photography, event portraiture for, in this case, it's the ceremonial portrait of the three leaders.
Yeah.
Although Churchill is about to be deposed, he loses the election in the middle of the Potsdam conference and is replaced by Clement Attlee. And that's Harry Truman's coming out party. That's where he arrives on the scene. He goes there with good intentions. He meets Joseph Stalin, who was one tough customer, and begins to realize the magnitude of the Cold War world as the hot war winds down. It is the situation. He wants to let Stalin know about the bomb. He does it in a kind of offhand way. He doesn't want to overdramatize it. Stalin, of course, knows about the bomb because of the spies. And Stalin is kind of noncommittal and sort of says, well, that's interesting. I hope, you know, that we can find use for it, essentially, to win the war.
You know, what do the two of you look for in a great portrait? What does a great portrait, Kim, have to have that lights you up?
You know, I do think a lot of the quote of Picasso, who says, art is a lie that illustrates the truth. And I think that we need to be careful when we look at a portrait in time, it's always an interpretation, it's a dialogue between the sitter and the artist. Sometimes they talk to each other and it's very complicit. We have an exhibition coming up about celebrity portraiture, and there's always somebody manipulating someone in that situation.
For a more flattering portrait.
Well, I mean,
ultimately,
we can go into that whole, and of course, let's not discount, you know, when you know that you're very consciously, as the presidents are, that there's going to be an audience that's going to be looking at this, you're very careful at how you pose that. So a portrait to me is really a window. It's just a starting off point for a whole conversation. It's not. To sum up one person in just one portrait is not the intention, and we don't, you know, aim to have it be one. So I'm always looking for sort of inroads, if you like. And, in fact, we will be opening an exhibition. As David said, we do a lot of temporary exhibitions on Elaine de Kooning, who did actually was commissioned by the Truman Library here to do a living portrait of John Kennedy. And we'll be lending that picture for the exhibition. But it's an amazing picture because the Kennedy administration wanted a woman artist. She paints in a very abstract, modernistic way, which was it was as much a political gesture to America but the world about this is a new art form. It's very – the brushstrokes are very, you know, aggressive. The color is very bright. So people coming to the portrait gallery and they see this picture and they're taken aback. Because it's not this traditional sort of, you know, holding a column. You know, we literally have a portrait of Washington where he looks like a sort of a Roman senator. And so it's having those little moments where you can talk about the context of a portrait. But then, you know, I like to think that every work of art is contemporary because the person standing in front of it at the time is bringing current-day thinking. Right. It's always being reinvented.
Famous last words, but I believe the Truman Library either had that painting you're talking about of Kennedy, or it's still there?
It's still there.
It's still there. Okay.
And
she kept
painting him over and over again. So
yes, I've read about.
She became absolutely mesmerized with Kennedy. We received one of what was many, many paintings. She got to know him at what was called the Summer White House in Palm Beach. It was one of, I think it was, in fact, the last portrait done of him before the assassination. Mm-hmm. And then the story has it that she, when she heard about his death, she stopped painting for a year. She was absolutely devastated. It's going to be an amazing exhibition. It opens on March the 12th, her birthday. So we hope that people come and see it.
David, what do you look for?
Well, I go two ways on this. First of all, I guess because as I've gotten older, I've become more romantic. So there's an element where I have it with works of art in general, as I've become more used to working with works of art, where it's almost just an emotional, aesthetic reaction to something, portraits in all media. The other thing that I want to just pick up from Kim, and I'm going to talk about this tonight in my talk at the Public Library, is that the portrait, even though it's posed and theatrical and seems to block off the past, is a portal into the past. Mm-hmm. That you start with the image of Harry Truman posed and dignified in his suit. And through that, you then work your way backwards through, you know, to the beginnings of his life and the way in which he struggled up to create that particular image. It's a dialogue back and forth through the past, which for me as an historian is just incredibly fascinating.
Well, again, the two of our guests will be speaking this evening at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. The event will be topped off by an unveiling of the Truman portrait there. And I want to thank Kim Sayat, director of the National Portrait Gallery, and the gallery senior historian David Ward for your time. You guys were just great. Thanks so much for a great conversation.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Steve.
It. Yeah.